joining me in studio this morning, 64th District State Representative Julie Alexander. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Steve.
You know, being the short week because the holiday was on Monday, sounds like you were actually really busy this week and recently.
Extremely busy. Yeah, it's been a full week, that's for sure.
All right. So, well, let's jump right in. Of course, today is September 11th, and you said you guys, the legislature had a ceremony yesterday.
Yeah, for several years now, we've had a 911 memorial service at the Capitol. And in the past, we've been able to bring a special guest from our community. I had my individual all picked. I had already reached out to him, a 25-year-old veteran in our city police force. And then we came to learn that because of COVID, we were going to be placed outside, socially distanced in the Capitol lawn, and I was not allowed to bring a guest. So very disappointed about that, but look forward to next year's when we can ceremony, when we can return to normal, and to give that recognition to our local individual. But it gives us a chance at the Capitol to acknowledge those that have given their life in service, that individuals within our state that have lost their lives this last year. So we acknowledged all of those individuals as well, reflected on what happened 19 years ago, had some very talented musicians singing songs, and it was a very reflective moment that was needed and appropriate.
Yeah, still the biggest historical moment of my lifetime that I can recall, and even 19 years later, still difficult to talk about without tearing up a little bit, or you know.
Do you remember where you were at, Steve?
Yeah, I was working that day in Kalamazoo. I lived in Kalamazoo for a year, but it was during that time I was doing metal finishing, and all we had, we didn't have television, so we were just relying on radio reports. So kind of not even certain what to expect from it. We didn't fully comprehend the scope of it until I finally got out of work, went home, and my friends, my roommates were still watching it on television. The coverage, and you know, just standing there with my jaw dropping and just didn't know what to say for a long time.
Yeah, there was definitely that feeling of disbelief, wasn't there?
Right. Yeah, it just seemed unreal. And so, yeah, it took a long time to comprehend. And I don't know that anybody who remembers the day, I don't think will ever quite get comfortable talking about it or become, you know, it'll always stick with people, I think.
Yeah, and what I recall also, I was out doing farm chores that morning and I heard it on the radio. But I also remember as a mom having to talk to my kids about it and also wondering what was happening at school. You know, were they showing the video or was the TV on for our kids to see? And at the time, you know, my husband and I are blessed to be raising four children. They each are a different age level, and the information that you present to them needed to be varied. So just that nervousness as a mom also, and how that was going to play out. And you reflected on all your loved ones. Where is everybody right now?
Right.
Is anyone flying today? Is everybody home? It was definitely leaves that that lifelong memory, as it should. I mean, to us, the biggest piece here is that we always remember. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the song you just played on the radio as well. I mean, do you remember where you were? But we need to continue to remember those that gave their life in service and through this devastating event, and the families that lost their life, but then reflect and thank those that continue to serve.
Well, and they recently held the Tunnel to Towers 5K, which that organization rose from that event. And I don't know how to characterize it, I guess, but just an interesting coincidence. The registrations were lower this year because of the pandemic and everything, but when they closed their online registration at the end of the before the event the next day, they had 343 people who bought tickets to the fight, and that was the precise number. That was the precise number of firefighters who lost their lives in the event. So that was an odd coincidence, but I think it touched some of those firefighters who were there.
Yeah.
So yeah, just always a somber day. And 19 years later, next year will be 20, and I'm sure there will be even bigger memorial services and kudos to everyone who puts one of those on, because I'm always touched by it. And yeah, I think it is important to keep remembering.
It is. Absolutely it is. And take all the opportunities we have to be grateful to be living in this incredible country with our freedoms, and those that serve, to give them, show them our sincere appreciation and thanks.
No doubt. Well, So let's talk about the work you guys have been doing this week, some of the stuff you've been doing in committee. And you mentioned something that we mentioned in the news, and that was the, I guess we can call it reform, but basically in licensing, occupational licensing, if you have had a felony, you guys took away some restrictions to make it easier for somebody who had a felony pass to move on and maybe get licensed in certain career fields.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a clause in our legislation when it comes to licensing. So many occupations, you need a license in order to provide that service. There's a clause in the legislation that says you must be of a good moral character. Yeah, I know. Laugh at that one. Yeah, I'd like to define that.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Difficult to define.
Yeah.
Who gets to define.
Exactly. And where is the consistency? Mm-hmm. We're not going to have any consistency because of that. We also don't have transparency that I think it is so important to have. I strongly believe the greater transparency and fairness in our state's licensing process is going to make for better legislation. We need to remove that vagueness, and especially how criminal convictions are evaluated. So if an individual holds a felony, they were automatically excluded from anything ever being considered for any licensing. Now, there are times and places, I don't doubt, there are certain offenses that and offenders that should be barred from some of those licenses. But I think we need to be very cognizant of what that license is, what has transpired since that individual has served their time to our community. We need to be reviewing those applications based on the skills, the qualifications, not just one point in time in that person's life. So we were very excited. It has now passed the House of Representatives. It's heading over to the Senate. And we look forward to, again, continuing to have that conversation over there with our senators, and would hope that the governor would sign that. We know that recidivism, keeping people out of prison, is so important. Once you're released, what can we do to allow that person to be successful? If they're employed, that is going to increase their chances of becoming a productive, law-abiding, tax-paying citizen. And that would be a good thing. So we were excited about this package. It's been a long time coming, but we know that those individuals should have the opportunity to become, you know, contributors to our state's economy, given another chance. And in this time with low unemployment and so many jobs not being filled, whether, you know, it could be construction, it could be plumbing, electrical work, if those are industries that some individuals want to go into, they should be allowed to, again, with proper oversight, each department as they are going through that licensing process should take into consideration that past felony. There may be some that should not be allowed, but it should be taken by a case-by-case basis, not have that vagueness of good moral character.
All right. And additionally, you had a committee meeting. You're the chair of the Agriculture Committee, and that kind of goes to the food supply, really. And so you had a meeting and talked to people. It's odd because we still feel like we're dealing with the pandemic, but there's an effort to look back and see what we did and what we could have done better, I think, a lot of the way, which is great because that will help us going forward as we continue to deal with it. And you kind of went through that with the food industry in Michigan.
Exactly, Steve. I, you know, as an educator by trade, I just naturally gravitate to learning and educating. Stopping and reflecting, what did we just go through? What did we learn? What needs to be done differently? And I used that opportunity as the chair of agriculture to hold a joint committee meeting. We met with the Commerce and Trade Committee, Representative Chair Steve Marino from Southeastern Michigan, and I co-chaired that meeting. And we brought the food and beverage industry to testify in front of us. We had about 12 testifying, we had about six. Then we created a video in which we have about 12 industries tell their story. What were the challenges of COVID-19 and how did it impact the food and beverage industry? It was significant, everything from restaurants to actual agriculture commodities. We also had retailers, and I was very excited to have Mr. Kennedy from our own Jackson community come up to Lansing and testify. What were the challenges when the executive orders presented themselves? in the early days, especially. What were those challenges? How did they present themselves to you in your industry? How did that impact you? And what could we be doing differently? What do we need to know in the future we need to be addressing? I think more people, more than ever, people realize the importance of our supply chain. They just assumed, you know, that product is going to be there in the store, the product's going to be there in the restaurant. A lot of people fail to realize that when you package that dairy product to go to the restaurant, it's packaged in bulk. Let's just take shredded cheese. Mm-hmm. It's packaged in large quantities. Well, those same large quantities aren't going to be sold at the grocery store. Same with milk for our kids in school. Those smaller containers of milk that are heading out to the kids at school are not going to be sold. We need gallons of milk, right? The jugs of milk at our store. So as that food supply chain, the packaging all changed. What were the implications there and what did you have to do to address it? Again, it's kind of a time capsule we created using the testimony, statements from the industry. We created a video. It will be on my state Facebook page. It will be on my website as well. Just giving those industries the opportunity to share their story.
Well, I personally was thankful. You mentioned Mr. Kennedy. I was thankful for Polly's right down the road. It was so convenient during the pandemic when I didn't know what was going to be open or where I was going to be able to go. At least those stores were open. And so super appreciative of those businesses that made it. 308 Brass Rail, who I mentioned, won our burger contest. Another place that really worked hard to help people out during the pandemic.
Absolutely, they did. 308 Brass Rail, Tom Rooney and his staff, they are incredible. They have fed more first responders, whether they were state troopers and correction officers and those on the front line in the health industry. They really stepped up and so grateful for so many people in our community. But again, the bottom line is, what were the challenges during those time? You'll like this one, Steve. Well, I think you'll like this one. So the bar industry. So everyone was gearing up for St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Do you know how many kegs are taken into stores, right? And they have the machinery, the equipment, to the dollies to get them into the store. They're heavy kegs. But then they also have to be taken back out because after a period of time, they've expired. You can't use them. So just the pickup and deliveries. A lot of our small local bars, they were really struggling because they had paid for that liquor. They had to pay for that liquor. It's sitting on their shelves. They're not able to sell it. And they don't have a large amount of money to deal with. Their cash flow is limited. So what were their challenges? What could we be doing differently? How could we address that? And then the bottle returns. What happens when we weren't able to return all the bottles and cans in our own homes, and how did that impact us?
I think I have still 4+ bags of returnable cans and bottles at my house that I've got that I'm running out of storage for. Well, additionally, with the announcement that high school sports was going to be able to resume, and my daughter has a volleyball game this afternoon, and I'm assuming that they'll be wearing masks at that game, and that's been kind of a contentious point. That executive order came out this week.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot on that, Steve. A lot of families, a lot of parents have been reaching out to me, concerns with the lack of clarity in the executive order, with the timeliness or the failure of timeliness in knowing what's going to happen, how it's going to be playing out, the role MHSAA has in it, a lot of confusion. A lot of parents just concerned about their child's safety, health, well-being. So how do we find that balance? Of course, it is important to everyone. But when an individual is outside, isolated, the concerns that parents continue to have to me, and I will continue to share with them. Thank you for reaching out to me. I am so pleased to hear, know, understand what your challenges are. These decisions are being made by our governor, and I would strongly encourage you to reach out to her as well.
Well, and the governor, I guess, via Dr. Khaldun's response was, if you can't wear the mask, then I guess that you just can't play. That seemed to be the response in the press conference from last week. So, or was it earlier this week?
Yeah. Well, we're up to 180 executive orders, so it's a challenge to keep them all straight, especially when the next one is introduced and it just offers more clarity. That's what we need. We need that clarity. We need direction in a timely fashion.
All right. Well, what else? I feel like you got some notes there.
There was one other thing in regard to chairing agriculture. We passed legislation in the House. It will now head over to the Senate as well. That would allow a veterinarian to speak to their client about using CBD oils on their animals. Right now, most veterinarians are silent on that. They don't feel comfortable because the law, Michigan law, does not address it. So we want to make sure that veterinarians are able to have conversations with their clients about the best treatment for their animals. But right now, in regard to CBD oil, whether it's hemp oil or marijuana oil, our Michigan law is silent on that. So the legislation we passed through our Ag Committee and through the House, now heading over to the Senate, would allow a veterinarian to officially have that conversation, and they would not have to fear any repercussion in having that conversation.
Yeah, because I hear ads for CBD oils for pets right here on WKHM, actually. And so if a pet owner heard that and wanted to get further advice or from their veterinarian, they would kind of offer the no comment because they were worried that by advising them one way or another, they might be actionable.
Yeah, and I was pleased when the representative from the UP, Rep. Ben Markkinen, introduced this legislation, but it had been on my radar because I had a half dozen Jackson families reach out to me asking for this clarification. And so then all of a sudden I saw he had the legislation, he was moving forward with it. So it is an issue that a lot of pet owners wanted to see. They want that clarification, and we're excited to now get it through the House, and let's get it through the Senate, and hope that the governor signs this law.
All right. Well, busy week at the legislature.
Yeah.
Ready to enjoy a weekend. And I guess, will you be rooting for the Lions on Sunday?
Sure.
64th District State Rep. Julie Alexander here in WKHM.